It's a very unique approach to filmmaking, I'd say. So it follows Mason Jr., played by Ella Coltrane, over 12 years, essentially, him growing from 6 to 18.
Yeah.
And we drop in and out of his life every year. And you see him grow, things happen. Not a lot happens, actually. There's no storyline, but there is so much that happens to him, as you would expect from somebody growing up in 12 years. I chose it because I found it pretty devastating to watch. For me, it hit home, and the rewatch was tricky.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Flix Watch Podcast. We're joined by Chris.
Hello.
Matt.
Hi.
Helen.
Hello.
And we're talking about the Richard Linklater classic. Is it a classic? Boyhood.
Thank you, as always, to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to this episode of Flix Watch Podcast. In the studio today, we have Chris and Matt. If you would like to say hello and tell the lovely listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Yeah, well, I'm Chris, and I'm half of the Movie Bunker podcast with Matt, where we talk about the poorly rated movies out there for our pleasure.
Yeah.
Is it pleasure, though?
Yeah, it started off that way. It started off, we'd had highfalutin ideas that what would, all reviewers knew nothing. And it would go down, we'd find these 5-star, 2-star, 3-star films. We would then find out they were utterly wrong about it, and they were absolutely perfect in gems.
So you thought you'd be mining through for the diamonds
classics
in the rough?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Didn't work out?
Didn't work out. It seems reviewers actually know what they're talking about most of the time. It's almost like they're professional at it.
Yeah,
generally it's right, but we try and pull out the little nuggets that are in them. Something, we tend to try and find something that's good, and if we can't, we tend to find a review by someone that is mentally ill in some fashion. So you love this film, but yeah, we try and pull out something good from the film.
So usually there is someone out there who will like any film.
Yeah.
There's always an audience.
And the reverse is true with people. When there's a film that everyone else seems to like, there's always a contrarian. There's a contrarian both ways, isn't there?
Yes.
And you'll always get like reviews, 5-star reviews on Amazon and Prime and stuff, and people rating the...
Yeah.
Well, one of the things we've noticed is obviously the fake reviews that you get. So, for instance, a critically panned movie that's worldwidely known as being incredibly poor, like, for instance, Cats or something, or Jack and Jill, or anything from Michael Bay, there'll be people out there that will enjoy the film but also give it a ridiculously high rating to combat that and to bring the thing. So you get these ridiculous 10 out of 10s, and they clearly they're parodies. And so that's quite difficult to negotiate your way around.
Yeah.
I think the good thing about it, sort of, for us is obviously... we're watching things that you would not choose to watch, you know, at all, because obviously we're film fans and we surround ourselves with that sort of film media, and we're both into podcasts and film podcasts and, you know, magazines for Empire magazine and all that jazz. And so you deliberately go out and want to seek the good stuff and see the good stuff, and we're finding that we don't have time. We've got no time for anything Oscar related.
That must be the most heart-wrenching part of it.
Yeah.
You've only got finite time. And
I think this Oscars, I haven't seen a single of the nominated films because I just haven't had time.
But, you know, you look at the Razzie nominations, we've tick that. For that reason, I think sometimes it can be a bit of a pain. Or when we get guests on, like yourselves, you know, we get them to choose a film that, you know, is critically panned by their peers, and then they have to defend the honour of it. And why do they like it? Why do they go against, what's been said about it? And so they're generally speaking a little bit higher tiered, aren't they?
Yeah,
so
they go up 2 or 3 points on the old scale. We let them.
We let them have it. Yeah. So, to be honest, it's too high. We want to go a bit lower.
So have you guys seen Cats?
No.
But I mean, surely that's your... that's your niche.
Well, we'll definitely be going for it. When it comes out. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
The problem is that we don't want to pay these films. Is that, like, it's already painful enough. If we had to, like, for our recent live podcast, we did Ed, which wasn't on any of the streaming services, and I ended up having to spend £6. But the thing is, like, I didn't have to spend. I could have spent £3.49 to rent it. But I thought, I might watch this twice because my memory's quite poor. So I figured the £6 was a bargain. So I ended up watching it twice just to make it worthwhile.
Well, we had a celebration when Holmes and Watson dropped on Sky Movies. So we were like, yes, it's out. We can do it.
Well, hopefully this is a good film we're talking about today. This is Boyhood.
Yes.
Chris, you chose it. Can you tell us why you chose it and give us a synopsis in a minute or less?
Yes, yeah, so a brief synopsis would be it's a shot in 39 days over 12 years, directed by Richard Linklater. It's a very unique approach to filmmaking, I'd say. So it follows Mason Jr., played by Ella Coltrane, over 12 years, essentially, him growing from 6 to 18.
Yeah.
And we drop in and out of his life every year. And you see him grow. Things happen. Not a lot happens, actually, but everything happens at the same. It's one of those things, like, there's no storyline, but there is so much that happens to him, as you would expect from somebody growing up in 12 years. I chose it because I found it pretty devastating to watch, for good reasons.
I don't know why I'm laughing. Sorry.
For good reasons.
Your emotion amuses me.
Yeah, I do get emotional at most films, especially things like this. For me, it hit home. And the rewatch was tricky.
But so again, is every year of his life captured, at least for some part of the film?
Yep. Yeah, they basically, in it, the uniqueness of filming it was quite, hadn't been done before. And a lot of filmmakers, I think, have tried to do something similar and given up because it's very time consuming.
I mean, is it that time consuming though? Because you can see, you get those snippets. And I get a lot of the skill in making a film production is getting everything tied down within like 4 weeks, 2 months.
Yep.
So this is, I guess, the most difficult part of this is like ramping up and ramping down again. But the way he does it, and I'm sure it was shot on film because back then it would have just been the digital.
It is on film. It's all on film.
Yeah. So doing it digitally would have looked so much worse and trying to get to that level. Yeah. So shooting on film gives it a bit more of a, it makes it a little bit more difficult because you have a bigger crew, but still it's kind of a skeleton crew for each of the setups really. It's not anything big or the brush is just like almost like a fly on the wall of these people's lives each time. Yeah. So it shouldn't be that much of a ramp up each time.
And also because it's only really got four cast members, and given that Ethan Hawke's a pretty good friend and it's his own daughter, you've only really got two other characters that they need to kind of negotiate, reoccurring negotiations.
I think a lot of it was on good faith as well, that the cast would come back because obviously for legal reasons they can't tie you into a contract for 12 years. So... Yeah, Ethan, as you say, Ethan was a big friend of Richard Linklater's, and obviously they've collaborated on all the before and after.
Trilogy, yeah.
Yeah. So there was that bond there. The main character, Mason Jr., his father is a musician that was known to Richard Linklater as well. So there was lots of connections.
Yeah.
And they were family friends, so they could see how it got made. And Patricia was well on board as well from the very beginning because it was so unique. I mean, she did incredibly well out of it in terms of awards. I felt really sorry for Ethan Hawke. Because, I mean, at the time, when award season was around, this movie was basically being nominated for everything. She was winning a lot. He didn't win anything. Supporting actor or anything, I don't think.
I can see that.
They're different for performance. Yeah. I mean, I think they're both great in it. I'll watch Ethan Hawke pretty much in anything because I really like him. But she is amazing in it. And you can kind of really see she kind of grows more and changes more. And I think she's probably got a bit more screen time. And because she's kind of, you know, the single mom bringing them up, her journey is just a bit more...
impactful, isn't it?
In detail, yeah. And...
it's
just great.
Tell us the thoughts. What do you think about the film generally?
Yeah, so I really liked it. I saw it at the cinema when it came out. It really annoys me when people go on about, oh, it's amazing because it was filmed over this amount of time. And that kind of becomes a little bit gimmicky. But it's one of those films where, like you said, nothing really happens, but then a lot really happens. So I think it's kind of like a perfect Richard Linklater film in that it kind of tells a story over a prolonged period of time. And the kind of story is it's just a family growing up and these are the things that kind of happen to them, which if you like that thing, it's brilliant. But I can kind of see where people have gone, oh my God, it's like nearly 3 hours of nothing happening. Really boring.
Yeah, I know people who don't watch drama based on real life or read fiction based on real life as you could perceive it, because they feel that, you know, you're kind of living it. And I know a lot of people who just like read sci-fi because they want to think of fancy and things that you couldn't necessarily think. But I really like this type of film making, and I really can get involved in other people's, because it's still not my life. I can still see what's going on here. And I do like I really like Richard Linklater as a movie, as a filmmaker. There's not many of his films I don't like. And we've had Bernie in here.
Yes,
which is the least piece. Which is the least Richard Linklater film.
I've seen half of it, to be honest, and it was. I don't know. It just didn't.
It's a bit of an odd one.
I struggled with it a little bit,
because even A Scanner of Darkly is more like, oh yeah, that seems like a Richard Linklater type film, even though it's a completely different concept. Matt, you've been very quiet.
I suddenly realised I'm probably the minority in the room. I think maybe because I hadn't seen it before, and I actually thought it was a different film when Chris said, "Oh, Boyhood," and I hadn't seen it before, and then because it was kind of given the fanfare of being Chris's choice, and we don't get to pick good films very often. So
it's big pressure.
I was sort of sat there, and he told me that he was emotional about it and stuff, and so I was. I think the problem was I was waiting for something to happen.
Sure.
Like right to the moment the screen went black, I thought, he's going to die.
Right.
we can see on the screen there the last scene. I'm like, he's going to do something. He's going to fall off that rock and it's just going to be an absolute tragic ending. So I don't know if I could see past the gimmick, because obviously there was a large risk taken when you bring on some seven-year-olds that they're going to grow into good actors. And you can see, I think for the main characters that worked, but for some of the other sort of siblings that they sort of inherit during the film, it's a bit am-dram, some of the bits and pieces. So I wasn't massively enamoured with it at all. So, yeah, I think I'm a bit alone on that one.
I mean, talking about the child actors, the most, and you're talking about had to kind of work on good faith that everyone's going to return.
Yeah.
It was actually his daughter that was least interested in coming back.
That's right.
And she wanted to die, apparently.
Yeah. So just
so that would have been the drama for you.
Like, with her.
Brought you in.
Do you need such big, I don't want to say bombast, but do you need such a big thing for you to evoke tears or evoke emotion?
Oh, yeah, I'm dead inside.
I mean, it's all those bad films you've been watching.
We're like night and day in terms of that, aren't we?
Yeah.
I mean, it won't take much to set me off. I think for me, the things that stuck out for me in this was just the change was, not given a fanfare when the scenes naturally close and you get another scene and you notice small things like the hair length is one of the first indications that we've gone from a time jump.
Yeah.
And it's silent but it's just like a sucker punch. I found it just very difficult because you're watching something so long in a short period of time, and it's so condensed, and I think it had a quite a profound effect on me, because you find yourself looking back so much and then looking forward, because, you know, I'm not saying you have to have children maybe to appreciate slightly more. I'm thinking maybe there might be an element of that. I think if you have a young family and you're already thinking about the day when they potentially leave and they go and do their own thing and letting go, loneliness and all those things. And then, you know, to see it happen, and then you're retrospectively thinking, oh, what have I done? What have I done in 12 years? And, you know, Mason is an interesting character. He obviously grows up to be creative. He's already keen on photography. He's got quite a unique style about him. He knows who he is as a person. Mm-hmm. You see him growing really nicely into something that you would, you know, we'd warm to do naturally. He's trying new things, you know, not necessarily good stuff. He obviously drinks, he's doing drugs, dabbles in bits and pieces there. And what we all kind of did probably growing up, and you know, finding himself as a person was just so interesting for me.
Yeah.
And looking back on my life and thinking, what have I done that I could, you know, condense to say it was have I done enough, essentially? Do you know what I mean?
But I don't think he's done
he kind of seems to be holding up on a high pedestal, but I think he's just living his life, and I think that's what's lovely about this film.
Yeah, life as well. I think nothing too flashy.
You know, there's nothing. He hasn't won the Nobel Peace Prize, but it's for me, it's like I look at it and just. You think of yourself and what you've done, and it's just so retrospective. And I found it's like a sucker punch for me.
And I thought it was brave to try and miss out on all these kind of cliches. The fact that Ethan Hawke's character, rather than staying as that serial bad dad or whatever like that, or he did actually, you saw him grow,
become a
reasonable person. And you saw Patricia Arquette's go through several marriages, serial
and
bad
partners,
choices.
Yeah. I think on this route, this is the second time I've seen it, but it's as interesting for me watching Ethan and Patricia, them grow in this as much as watching the kids grow, because obviously the kids' growth is more apparent. They shoot up like 2 foot their voices change and they have different, and suddenly, they try new things, which they weren't doing when they were 6 and 7. And the relationship's different, a lot more different. But seeing, Patricia Arquette going through the... initially meeting that lecturer and thinking everything's good, and he turns to drink and becomes abusive. They leave that relationship, and I felt really sorry for the kids that they were leaving behind.
That's awful scene.
Yeah, and I can project onto that scene that Patricia's character was thinking, I need to take these other kids, but I can't do that. That's probably what kept her there longer than she would have wanted to originally. If it was just her kids, she probably would have been out there earlier. And then going into a second relationship, which turned to be, we didn't see it as physically being as abusive, but
there's
an undercurrent. There's something not quite.
And then
right.
the next, and like I say, when it just fades to the next scene, he's not there anymore. Yeah. You're like, okay, well, you could see that because he was a twat.
What's
kind of cool.
Denominator here?
Exile me.
Yeah, exile me. Is that once it zoomed in, focused in on him opening the beer, I was like, okay, he's out. Scene or next.
But I want to see what she does to drive all of the people that she's with to drink.
Yeah, but why is it blaming on her?
She makes a joke about it, doesn't it, at the end? She makes bad men choices and she kind of knows that.
Because we see her second husband. We see him before, and he looked like a lovely man, right? He was talking about his time in the war and how he was more sort of touchy feely. They reached out, nice guy. We see Ethan Hawke after relationship turn into a nice guy. I mean, with the lecturer, we don't really see, but
it's the kids. They never had kids before, and they've just inherited her kids.
It's a good point. It's a good point, and maybe there is something there that But I don't know. I mean, I think. Potentially, they're trying to portray her as someone who's trying to do the right thing to have a father figure in her kids' lives, and looking at people that potentially might have a good way of steering them in the right direction, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work for a lot of people. Matthew, how dare you?
Yeah. I mean, it is real, isn't it? A lot of people make a lot of bad relationship choices, and that kind of gives it this authenticity that she is trying to. Make this life right, and she thinks these men when she meets them are going to be good father figures and right for her, but then it kind of turns out down the line that there's underlying issues which don't make them compatible.
And I wouldn't blame Pat's character at all. That sounds super dark. I think that's just kind of ingrained in these people.
I think that's ingrained in American culture, to be honest.
I wouldn't make a broad brush against America, but there's people who are...
Well, the later boyfriend is obviously coming back from war, which is obviously lots of things on his mind. And then obviously the first guy is very much that kind of American, almost like a stereotype. So, one of the really sad bits is when he shaves Mason's hair.
I thought such a dick.
He's one of those people who, guys should not have long hair. That is what he thinks. And, kids should clean his house. He's that kind of American person.
Definitely have chores, but don't be such a dick about it.
that was his character, though, that kind of person. That
there was
we
red
see
flags all over that relationship, weren't there? It was crazy.
I loved, with Ethan...
he's a cool dad.
Yeah, he's a cool dad.
He's a terrible father, he's a cool dad.
He's taken the flags off for... he's putting flags down, helping put flags down for Obama.
I
can't remember who the other guy was at the time.
McCain?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, so. Taking them off the front lawn. But also things like that really put it in that kind of sense of time, which I really appreciate, as well as the soundtrack changes.
The soundtrack's amazing.
The soundtrack annoyed me a bit too much this time because it was only snippets of things. And I'm, you know, as I started to get going, I was like, then it's gone again.
Yeah.
Not the whole song necessarily, but there was just, you didn't, it was just like a bit of Coldplay to put you in 2000 whatever.
One.
Yeah. And there's that kind of thing, you're just like, and now this is the time, guys. Okay, good.
Yeah.
A bit of Do You Realize by the Flaming Lips, because it's now that year. And it's slightly
those
gimmicky.
Things
but
I found
still
a little jarring, though, because like the hairstyle.
A bit contrived.
And then the music switching. And then there was a couple of times where they were talking about things of that year.
Mm. Oh, like, Star Wars as well.
Yeah, the films. Oh, the films are out this year. And it's just like it felt a little bit too much like we've got to quickly shoehorn it, because we're doing this wonderfully novel thing of spreading this over 12 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That we've got to show it. We've got to, you know.
There's a bit where they edit in, or I don't know what it's edited in, but there's a deliberate like close up of an iPod in a docking speaker. And you just think, yeah, that's quite a clanger, because that was quite jarring. But yeah, I think from a signpointing point of view, it worked for me. And all the songs, well, most of them were great. You know, you say the Flaming Lips, and Wilco was the one for me because I was a massive Wilco fan. And the Sky Blue Sky was their best album, is still considered to be their best album. Mm. And the scene with Dad talking to Mason about...
Well, Mason Senior talking to Mason Junior.
in the car, talking about that song, and he's trying to explain the lyrics. You know, this song is about... It's a country and western song. Well, you know, the lyrics are about... And this, that and the other. And I was thinking, yeah, this is quality. But the thing about Ethan Hawke's character, the dad, is... You know, he gets the glory. He breezes in and breezes out, and Patricia's there dealing with the day-to-day nitty and gritty, and that, I think, is clever.
Yeah, I think with anyone else playing it, then he would have come across a bit more of the jerk.
Yeah.
I think because it's Ethan Hawke,
you're
kind of like, yeah, we know his behaviour's pretty bad.
But is it, though? I mean, he's got a small window with the kids, mm-hmm. and so he wants to do the best he can, make it enjoyable for them. You know, we don't know why he left, and we don't know why they split up. It's alluded to at the end slightly.
You said they were both too young.
Yeah, and they were both young parents actually in real life. I think that's what sort of steered them towards the project. For me, he doesn't appear to do anything wrong. I just think he's trying very hard to get the kids on board and to have a good time, to be that dad that's cool.
Yeah.
And I think I would probably do the same. you know, talk about sex, try to do a bit of sex ed, but do it in a lighthearted way. Mm-hmm. Talk about music, talk about being yourself, being the person you want to be, encouraging conversations. You know, that bit where he pulls over in the car and he says, I don't want to be that dad. You know, don't say everything's fine. You know, my kids do that now, and they're like 9 and 6, and they come home and say, how was school? Don't know.
You need to just have a cooler car, and then you do it.
The Trans Am. Was it a Trans Am or something? No, it wasn't that good.
It's cooler than that.
Some big stalwart American car.
Yeah. That one resonated in my heart when he sold his car and bought a minivan. And Mason was like, you're going to give me that car?
Yeah. You don't remember, like, do you?
Pretty sure I didn't say that.
But he kind of really shot Mason Jr. down then. He's like, if I said that, I don't remember. But honestly, it's my car to sell, so go.
He's right.
Think about your sister. What would she get if I gave you the car?
Yeah, but he's obviously, it's the way he held on to that. That and how kids do that. It's like, I get
throwaway comments.
You get that all the time. It's like, Dad, you lied. I said, what about? You said we were going to that today, and we haven't gone. I said, well, it's not technically a lie. It's just something else has happened.
You lied to your kid.
It's like, no, you lie all the time.
One thing I wanted to talk about. So this came out in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good year for film.
That was also the Birdman, which we've had in the cinema,
Whiplash.
Here. Whiplash is amazing.
Yeah, so it was because this won quite a few awards, I remember, but it kind of lost out, I think, a little bit to those two as well. And it was only really Patricia Arquette that kind of picked up the majority of what she was nominated for.
Did she win Best Actor?
Supporting Actress, at the Academies.
When you guys first heard about this, obviously... Matt, you didn't know what this film was until recently. But when you first heard about it, did you watch this in the cinema, Chris?
No, I watched it pretty soon after general release.
Okay.
I didn't manage to get to the cinema.
But when you knew about this film, what was your anticipation of it?
I didn't know much about it.
Oh, really?
Obviously, I heard the reviews.
Yeah.
I knew the concept, but I don't know what I was expecting. But I knew it was something that would appeal to me just by the way that it was sold and set up, and the trailer looked very good. It was such an interesting concept, as I said. And, you know, I've not seen much of Richard Linklater's movies or his work before. So it was a good gateway into other stuff that he's done, certainly. And the more I researched today, you know, talking about it, the more I've been able to actually think, oh, I might go back and just do a bit of a rewatch on a lot of his stuff, and or seek out the stuff that I've not seen.
Yeah,
because he is interesting.
He's a very interesting filmmaker. Are you a fan of Linklater?
Yeah, I am. The ones that I've seen, I've not seen them all because some of them are a little bit trickier to get hold of. But I really like the Before After
trilogy.
Yeah, the trilogy. I really like that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else.
One of my favourite films ever is Dazed and Confused.
See, I saw that recently and I was a bit like, not sure about that one.
I need to go back to that one because it's lost in the banks of my memory.
I think sometimes it is when you watch it, because I watched that first when I was at school. I was going to leave school the year after and I was like, yeah! High school, going to leave and then be a big man in the big world.
Yeah.
But I still really love it, and I still think it's an early filmmaker, early indie filmmaker. But I think the things he does are just, they are noodly and they're kind of navel-gazy, but they're also, I think they're kind of, they are pits at the right level. And if someone else did the Before trilogy, it would just not work in any way, shape or form. And Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke in the first one is still one of my drop-dead favourite films. I think I've only seen it twice, but it's those two talking, they meet on the train and they're talking for like an hour and a half. He somehow makes that amazing.
Well, you mentioned navel gazing there, and this movie Boyhood is just full of it. I mean, every piece of dialogue that Mason Jr. says towards the end of the film is utter navel gazing to the 10th degree. And you know, in a different kind of setup, in a shorter, a differently conceived film, it would have been quite bad and come across as quite contrived. But he gets away with it because you just think, yeah, he's going through those feelings and processes in real time.
Yeah.
And looking back on that, it's quite easy to see yourself doing that. I mean, we all, when we were growing up and getting into teens and struggling with who am I, what am I going to do, where am I, what is life?
I had the crappy jobs at, working in restaurants and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, had a boss who thought he was amazing, and you're like,
if you try hard,
come on, mate. Yeah.
One day, this clip on tie could be yours.
But his social media comments were quite good as well, even back in 2014, or the last week he was talking about, you know, live the moment, and you know, you're on, and they start talking about in the car.
Has he done anything else since?
Richard Linklater or Ella Coltrane? He's done bits, but I don't think anything.
No, I think he's kind of like one of those model slash actors, possibly.
He's a slashy.
Yeah.
He's waiting for that next big 12-year project.
Well, do you want to head to the scores, guys?
Why not?
Hello, I'm Sam Pay.
And I'm Martin Zotz-Austwick.
And together we host a show called
Song by Song,
where we deal with the music of Tom Waits. We've been going since 2015. Every week we talk about a new track. We've made our way through 15 seasons so far of his music.
And now we're going back to the early years. And if you haven't listened to Tom Waits before, it's not the growly stuff. It's not the stuff where he's hitting an automobile with a bone for percussion. It's a nice, easy way into his music.
If that sounds like something you would be interested in, you should check out our website, songbysongpodcast.com, or put Song by Song into your podcatcher of choice.
Welcome to the Flixwatcher scores. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we will start with you, Chris, with your recommendability, please.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 5.
How many times have you seen this now? Well, I mean, it's going to bleed a bit into the repeat viewing score, but...
Well, I've seen it twice.
Mm-hmm.
I'd recommend it for the reasons why we've discussed. I mean, there is so much going on in it, but yet nothing at all. And as a piece of work that's different and unique, I think it's a must-see. And if you're a fan of the director, then it really does really incorporate everything that he does very well.
Yeah. Matt. And you can go to decimal places here if you want.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because I think it has a sort of certain person audience to this. I don't think it would be one you'd go like, you know, you'd segue from talking to Star Wars and go, oh, by the way, I've got a great film for you. What's this? So I think it's going to be, I'm going to go halfway, I'm going to go 2.5.
Oh, oof.
Smash in the middle.
Mm. Helen.
I mean, I really like this, and leading into the repeat viewing, I hadn't seen it since I'd seen it at the cinema, and did really enjoy watching it again. And there's a lot of things that I really, really, really love about it. But I'm going to give it a 4.7 for the people like Matt who it's not for them. I don't think it is for everyone. Mm. Like, my dad wouldn't watch this. I know loads of people who wouldn't watch this. And also it's really long. A lot of people would just be like, I just don't have the time to watch a film that's nearly 3 hours where basically a kid grows up.
Yeah. I think if it hadn't been recommended to me, I would have enjoyed it more as well. My low recommendation.
Do you kind of get your haunches up when someone...
No, it's just I kind of went, ooh, and then... I think if I'd stumbled across it, then I'd have maybe enjoyed it more.
But if it had stumbled across it and you looked at the time and it was like, 3 hours, would you have...
3 hours is a tough stumble, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I remember seeing it in the cinema and I don't think it had quite reached its hype machine when it got there. Mm. And I think I sort of saw it on the premise that it was Linklater and Ethan Hawke, and it was kind of like this sort of experiment over time, rather than it being this award-winning film that had been out. And, you know, I know when it came out, quite a few people like really, really loved it, and it was their favourite film ever. Mm.
Yeah, I think it was one of my favourite films that year. In a year that I saw Birdman at cinema, saw Whiplash at cinema. I can't remember what else that year, but it was a strong year. But I haven't watched it again. A lot of it because of that 3 hour thing. Mm. And I had such a good time in the cinema watching it as well. For me, if you're going to watch a 3 hour film in the cinema, is the best place to do it. You can't, literally, you cannot do anything else. Mm. My repeat, this time when I watched it, I did watch in sections. Just a busy period of my life, moving house and all that stuff. So, but it was actually quite nice to watch it episodically. I could stop like every one again and go, okay, well, I'll pick it up in like 2 hours time when I'm back home, or I can do this and that. So I think that might be how I watch it in the future. But I do really love it. I do really like this kind of film. I do really like sci-fi as well. I do really like a lot of types of films, but I do really like when someone portrays real life well. And I don't think that's been done better outside of this film, because you just can't. You've followed the same people for 12 years, which is a phenomenal thing. And I know it's gimmicky in a way, and it's high concept in a way, but if you hadn't stuck the landing the way you did, it wouldn't be the film, is it? But I think you really did stick the landing. Mm. And the bit at the end, I didn't cry in this film, but I can see why people would get emotional about it. But seeing, and I remember when I went to university and I put all the stuff into my room, turned around, and my mum was literally about to start floods of tears. But then one of my best mates from school, who was also the same, literally came down the hallway at the same time. Mm. And you could tell she was gutted that she couldn't just really...
Say goodbye.
Yeah, because say goodbye properly.
Obviously, oh, man, don't. Like, you're going to set me off.
But that was that scene for me is like... I could understand that so much more. And that's...
Well, is the thing, you know, my wife is always crying about this subject, you know, the boys leaving, and...
I got the party poppers in already. I got
party poppers. Like, you're going to put them on a pedestal and kick them out.
Get out. The kids go out the door and go, oh, I forgot my phone, and come back and I'm painting the bedroom. Sorry. This is now my screening room.
Yeah, but what's, you're not allowed back in. You've got the sofa now.
The locks are being changed.
Just in my pants.
But yeah, I'm going to join Helen on, well, I'm going to... bit higher, 4.75, because there are definitely people who would find this more difficult to swallow because of the concept, because it's a nudie film and because of the time. But for anyone who's slightly open-minded, then... You tried.
Open-minded, man.
But my wife and I sat next to someone in the cinema and she was just like floored at the end, and she's like, oh my God, this is a... I don't know if she's American. Oh my God, this is a classic.
Sounds like
she... From my memory, she's American. And I was like, why are you talking to me? But it's still that... I really have interactions with people straight away in the cinema like that. And she sat by herself. And I think she just wanted to like say something to someone. After I got over the why you're talking to me bit, I was like, yeah, good. Sorry, Helen.
Yeah, I was just going to also say that I recently watched... mid-90s recently, and I kind of liked it, but it had nowhere near the sort of effect or storytelling or anything that this had. I mean, I said to you that I kind of felt that it felt a bit more like a couple of ideas sort of thrown together rather than anything like a proper story.
Mid-90s. Obviously, it follows one kid over
like a
couple
summer. Of weeks yeah. or something. Summer, maybe.
He doesn't have any real friends. His brother's a bit of a dick. Like, and
falls in with a skater gang.
Yeah.
Mm. I felt there was no real depth in the kind of characters in that. I mean, I did enjoy it. There was a lot to like about it.
I think
it was kind of interesting, but it's not. It's nothing compared to this.
For me, what I loved about mid-90s was just the... when I used to just love hanging around with other boys in the summer and like riding the bikes and like going to the pond and fishing out for tadpoles. It's that kind of stuff that I really just didn't... emoted with me. But repeat viewing score for Boyhood.
Okay, it will have to be lower because, I mean, it is an investment of time. And if you found
when you say investment, that's a good thing, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think... for
if it pays out.
the time that you're putting into it, I think repeat viewing would be... my recommendation would be to watch it in segments, as you said, because it would actually probably deliver the same in a way. If you watched it in half an hour segments, it'd probably be fine. Repeat viewing, I'll probably say about a 3.5. It's an emotional thing to get through as well for those of you who are emotional.
Matthew. People stop looking at me when they talk about all these things.
Matt.
You're not going to watch this
again. I'm never
going
to watch this again. I'm never going to watch this again. I'm not. I'm not going to do it. So, a one, I guess, just because if it went on to like ITV2. And it was really late and I was scrolling through and it was this or Tipping Point, then I might carry on watching it for a bit.
You could just go to sleep if you don't want to watch the thing. It's fine. Helen. Read a book.
Yeah. I mean,
listen to a podcast.
So I remember choices. Seeing this it come on Netflix and I was like, oh, Boyhood's on. Do I want to watch it? No, not really. But I did really enjoy rewatching it. It was quite long. 3, I think. I mean, I probably would watch it again, but not immediately. If someone said to me, oh, I really, really want to watch it, have you seen it? I'd be like, yeah, but let's watch it again. I'd probably be like that. But I did really enjoy watching it again, but it is quite long. And I, the same as you, I kind of watched it... in bits, just because I just didn't have the time in one go.
For one sitting.
Which I think kind of worked.
It did. And when, obviously, Irishman's out now, and quite shortly after people posted, like, okay, watch it as a miniseries, stop at 45 minutes in, stop at 1 hour 30, it's like, yeah, that's fine. That actually makes sense.
Yeah.
It is a hard thing to lay out, especially if you've got kids or if you've just got a busy time at work and you come back and you're tired, to sit down for 3 hours and, like, that be your sole focus is a hard ask these days.
Yeah, definitely.
But I do, I'm going to go higher. I'm going to 3.75. I'm really glad. I think every time I watch it, there'll be other things to pull out of it that you didn't see. And I really just enjoyed watching Patricia Olivia's character. And one of the things I loved when in the cinema, as please, you know, again, because you had the four core characters, but you had the ancillary people that you saw like once and then they came back like two scenes later. It was that guy that's helping out with their house and helping with the sewage. And then he came back like an hour later or like 10 years later and said, you don't remember me, but you told me I should go to school and I did do. And now, and, you know, it changed my life. Yeah, it wasn't a high flyer, but for him, it's just like a massive step in the right direction.
One free lunch for that.
Yeah.
She
was a cynic, right?
If it had been Greg's or Nando, she would have got black carded.
Yeah, I'd have been like, Greg's, you know, throw me some vouchers.
Is there a Greg's black card?
Apparently so.
There is, yeah.
Stormzy's got one. Yeah, Stormzy's got one.
I knew about a Nando's black card. I haven't seen one. But,
no one's seen one.
it's so black you can't see. It absorbs all the... It's a black hole. It's a Greg's black hole.
Oh, that's me.
There's a Greg's just down the road. It's open on Saturdays. Go for
yum-yums. You get vegan sausage roll for £1.
Oh, they're all right then.
Yeah, they're good.
Flicks Watcher podcast sponsored by Greg's.
Well, the other thing, this is probably the first time we talked about Greg's, even given the vicinity we are to a Greg's.
See, we bring it down, don't we? To pastry.
You bring in these country bumpkins.
So we talk about in Southampton, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pastry goods.
Small screen score.
Yeah, I mean, I think it works on a small screen. Mm. Not too small. Laptop's fine. I watched it on a laptop this time around as a rewatch because it was so convenient to do that. It's not high def, def. You know, you don't have to be completely bombasted. Is that the word?
It's a word.
by the special effects or anything, you know. So for small screen score, it's very high. You're looking at a 4.5.
I'm going to give this high score because I think this type of film works perfectly on a small screen. And as you say, it labels that episodal nature of these long films. I mean, even to the extent of like having it on a phone or something like that, it doesn't really detract from the, you know, the ambiance of the film. And in a way, you can feel more engaged because you're sort of bringing it around with you. You know, you're changing your life at the same time as that. So I'm going to go with a 5. It's the perfect sort of small screen thing.
Helen?
I think because the nature of nothing really happens that much, it does have that kind of TV series sort of feel to it. But saying that, I did really enjoy watching it at the cinema. I watched it at Screen One in the Ritzy, which if you've ever been to that cinema,
no.
It's like a beautiful kind of old style with the curtain.
Deco-y.
Yeah, Art Deco-y. It's their biggest screen and it's a really lovely cinema. And I do really remember that experience quite well. But I rewatched it on the go on the iPad. So yeah, that was fine. So I'm going to go 4.5.
Yeah. Again, cinematic experience was lovely. But I think I wouldn't go to see this at the Prince Charles if it came on. I don't think it needs that. But it was nice seeing it with other people in the cinema the first time. And I don't think the soundtrack warrants you trying to get the best, you know, THX Dolby Atmos scene because it wasn't shot that way. One thing I did actually this time around, so I'm going to go for 4. One thing I did do this time was after the film first came out, the soundtrack was on my Spotify for a couple of years. But this time I forgot that Ethan Hawke made that Black Album compilation. And someone has made that. Supposedly Ethan Hawke, it says on Spotify. I don't know if it is him or not.
Mm. It's quite good. It's on the way up. So I wonder if that's a Spotify playlist.
It is a Spotify playlist.
He actually made it for his daughter.
Oh, yeah. Ethan Hawke did?
Yeah, in real life to help with the breakup with Uma Thurman. Yeah.
Ah, okay. Well, that's really cool.
It is him.
Maybe there is generally Boyhood Black Album on Spotify and it's by Ethan Hawke, it says. So I don't know who it was. But he hasn't got that many followers, so maybe that's what I was like, I don't know.
Could be suspicious.
But then the album's, it's a bit too long. It's like a triple album. I think if it cut down, because some of the songs...
people's body of work, though.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be every single song. But I think if they just chose more, it was like four songs. Yeah, exactly.
It could have been like 3 songs long.
But John Lennon's definitely the best outside of the Beatles, I think. Anyway.
Oof, controversial.
Who would you have?
Paul McCartney.
Really?
Yeah.
Live and Let Die, outside of that, what have you got?
The Frog Chorus. What's wrong with the chorus? What's wrong with you?
The Frog Chorus doesn't make it.
You've been around Matt too long.
The Frog Chorus.
Paul McCartney 2 is the one with Coming Up and the other one, Temporary Secretary.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, that's a good album.
He is very good. I know he's... a bit sort of suspicious nowadays, you know, but...
Suspicious?
Well...
don't know where we're leaning into.
Yeah. What are you saying about the high litigations of Paul McCartney?
I quite like the Wings stuff.
Wings is brilliant stuff. Yeah. Jet!
It's fine. I just think, you know, We All Shine On, whatever. It's not called that, I know that, but Imagine. Inside the Beatles, I love George Harrison's my favourite, but outside of the Beatles, it's John Lennon, I think.
It's not Ringo anyway.
They're just best together, weren't they?
they were best together. Although Imagine is a Stone Cold, and War is Over. Merry Christmas, War is Over is one of my favourite Christmas. Anyway, so yeah, small screen scores. I'm going to go for 4. Let's go 4.4 because that's what I've written.
I won that. Eesh.
That's not how it works. Engagement score. Chris?
Yeah, engagement for me was a 5. Definitely, I'm completely and utterly engaged with this movie from all the right reasons. Well, and the wrong reasons, I guess. I don't know why I said that. But the tragedy and the tragicness of growing old and getting, seeing your life flash before you in a metaphorical way. And that's kind of what happened to me. And I was completely and utterly engaged with it. Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette really carry this elevate it so much, and they're great actors, and you just really realise it watching this. So yeah, a five.
Matt?
I thought I'd give this the best chance possible, and I watched the whole thing in one sitting. And I didn't drift away that often, to be fair.
When you say drift away, is that fall asleep or is it go to the toilet?
It's like, it's the phone,
the tea break. You know, okay, yeah.
So that didn't happen too often. So it is oddly compelling to watch through. So four.
Helen.
So watching it the second time, obviously I said I watched it in bits, so that I can't give it its full engagement. And I guess it is because it's so kind of meandering, it doesn't really require you to give it 100% concentration, because it's not like there's any important plot things you'd miss. But one thing on the engagement, did anyone else notice Ethan Hawke's teeth?
Did they change?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I didn't.
He's had some work done, which is what I remembered from the first time watch. And then I was like, did I imagine that or is it a thing? But yeah, he's...
I'm going to have to watch it again now.
Yeah. But that's quite...
That's repeat viewings.
That's just... would be a part of life as well. In the same way, the beard changes and hair changes.
But interestingly, apparently Linklater told Patricia Arquette not to get any surgery during the filming.
Mm. Really?
It's one of the trivia things, which I think was interesting.
Mm. I wonder what kind of surgery she's thinking about.
Well, I don't know. I mean, a woman in Hollywood, it would probably be everything that you're expected to do. Which I think it is really interesting that she kind of doesn't, and it kind of adds to the realism. So I'm going to give it a 4.5 for engagement.
Going to join in 4.5, four for the second time, because like with Helen, I had to watch it episodically. Mm-hmm. But each time I put press play again, each time I was like, oh, I need to stop here because I've got other stuff to do. But I was looking forward to diving back in there. And five for the first time in the cinema, because I was just like, this is great. Mm. And for the first few years, Mason Junior, you can't really tell where the cuts are. Mm. And the most obvious is when his hair gets shaved, and then obviously when the guys kind of move in, and that's when there's a definite kind of change in the scenario. Mm. So for the first few years, you can maybe change a little bit, but then it kind of accelerates, doesn't it? Once it suddenly
gets very tall.
And it does look quite close to Ethan Hawke. You can really imagine them being...
They all look like kind of a family, don't they?
Yeah.
They do, yeah.
Like the daughter and the son have sort of got the same nose.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's good casting.
Yeah,
casting, mm-hmm. saying that you had no idea potentially what they were going to look like in 12 years.
Mm.
He was a great actor as a 7-year-old.
Yeah.
I thought, I was like, well done.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved the early scenes when...
talking about wasps.
No, oh, I was going to say, but I was going to talk about wasps. No, when Mason Junior's sister, played by Laurie Lee Linklater, kind of runs into the room, hits him, and then starts singing Britney Spears. Yeah. I was just like, yes, that's siblings.
Yeah,
that's exactly that kind of nonsense that
and
you
then
do.
Pretend she got hit.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's things like that had me from the start. It's like, okay, they're doing this like well. So that gives us an overall score of 4.03750.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Anything over a four is pretty strong, isn't it?
Yeah, good.
That's despite my scores as well.
Well, I think you bumped it up there a little bit as well. Matthew, I appreciate that.
So we always go out to Twitter and tell people, our Twitter people, the film's going to watch ahead of time. In this case, we are reviewing Boyhood with Chris Alden and Saint_Matt. Is that because you support the Saints?
Yes.
Okay. Matt Letizier, where's he been?
Yeah, bring him back.
From movie_bunker. Have you seen it? Give us your thoughts for an on-air shout-out. And the score of 5 stars. We had one response today. Chris, I'm sure you're not going to enjoy saying this response, but...
Yes, well, some tasteless podcast chap said, 1 star, hate, boring, why?
All in caps as well.
Yeah, exactly.
We normally read these reviews out in a voice.
Yeah, so. No, I don't... but it was outrageous, was my reply.
And he did give a...
He came back,
yeah. It's an uncomfortable theater. To be fair, if you're like on a hard seat, this is going to be tough.
Yeah. So, yeah, his response is, yes, but to be fair, I saw an uncomfortable theater with someone I hate, but so bored by it. Yeah, I think... The thing is, it's the one...
I mean, that was...
He set himself up poorly, hasn't he?
Yeah.
But it's also sometimes when there's a film, I go to cinema quite, I guess, half the films I see with my wife, half the films I don't see with her. But sometimes it's like Marvel films, I'm like, I'm going to go and see this film, Sarah, see you later. Because I know as much as she wants to come with me, she wouldn't be enjoying it. And me, like, kind of side-eyeing her, knowing that she's not enjoying it takes away from a lot of the enjoyment of doing it.
Yeah.
So I'd just rather watch it by myself.
And there's lots of films like that.
Yeah, exactly. So I can, if you're with someone you hate and they're sat next to you, that's got to be one of the worst things ever.
2 hours and 43 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Wrong decision.
In an uncomfortable theatre.
But also you could be dead inside like Matt and just not really enjoy this kind of movie. It's not for everybody. And I think there will be people that will go, oof, no, this is dull.
Well, like Tesla's podcast.
Yeah.
Why do this?
Yeah.
There's a fine line between the comfortability of the theatre, though, for a 3-hour film, right?
Yeah.
Like, 1 hour's reclining seats and stuff, you're going to go.
Well, that's where I saw Irishman was in, as much as I still hate the screen, is in the Odeon Leicester Square, where they've now redone it and all the seats reclining. And after I found out, it's about half hour, I was like, oh, I'm going to lean as far back as possible, my friend. And that does make it quite nice, and that's why I probably wouldn't watch Irishman at home unless someone brings it to FlixWatcher.
Yeah,
but it does make a difference.
I think I was weeping in watching The Return of the King at the end of that because I was just, please stop this film. I want to get out of here.
Yeah, but that film teases you at its end.
It's not. Oh, no. Can I go now? Oh, no. When's it the end? Well, guys, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you for bringing Boyhood to our podcast. Can you explain where people can find you online and say goodbye to Jasper and who else is listening?
Yeah, well, we are online. We have a virtual presence as well online. So, yeah, themoviebunkerpodcast.com.
We splashed out on the com.
Yeah, so the website is the best place to get all the links to Instagram, Twitter, Facebook page. And we like to get feedback from everyone. If we, like yourselves, we tweet that we're going to do a film, get comments, especially with these turkeys that are out there. Yeah, the more interaction from people that like the film as well is better for us.
No, thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Bye.
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 Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.